Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Thursday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Skyline Studio, high atop the Chicago River with the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll talk real estate. You heard Dennis Rodkin's voice there from Crane Chicago Business. We'll kick around the housing market a little bit later. It's just not good news, or it hasn't been, and we'll try to figure out why and try to find a few spots where things are perking up. That's later. Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning experts. Okay, so I want you to, while we're talking, pretend to break up and lose your phone line. Thank you very much, because it's going to be that kind of a day. How have you been? We haven't seen each other in a while.
I know. It's been a while. You've grown a beard since last time I saw you.
I had not only a beard, it was brown when it started, and now it's bright white.
That's the pressure of the job you have.
I think that must be the case. Speaking of pressure, you know, we've been talking a lot in the last few weeks, well, for the past few months, really, about signs of a recession or a looming recession or all of that. And, you know, consumer confidence report came out earlier this week. It had dropped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about the fact that this is a consumer-driven economy. And the more we start talking about a recession, the more people are going to believe it's going to happen. And it could well become a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Well, it's just a little bit more than that, I think, this time. You've heard a lot of talk about, I say that for three different reasons. You've heard some talk about inverted yield curves, right?
Right.
In plain English, what that means is that short-term interest rates are higher than long-term interest rates. And what's important about that is every recession for the last 50 years has been preceded by an inverted yield curve. So it's a pretty strong indication that at some point in the near future, you're going to have a recession. The other reason is we're at a trade war with China, and if that wasn't reason enough, we're now impeaching the President of the United States.
Right.
And you put all that together with consumer confidence, and we're getting a little bit concerned about that.
Well, the fourth one, I would add, is the fact that we're in the longest recovery in our history, right? I mean, so
sooner or later.
Recessions happen. It's not like, you know, we can think that it's never going to happen again.
Absolutely. And It is going to happen. We just don't know when, but it feels like. And after doing this for 35 years, Steve, I can tell you I believe in my gut more than I do in a crystal ball.
Is it like a trick knee or something? You start to get that pain?
Yeah, it's going to rain, right?
It's going to rain.
My gut is telling me that it's just a little bit concerning. Right?
Okay. So
everything that's going on.
All right. So we've got our investments. We see that there might be storm clouds on the horizon. What do you suggest we do?
Steve, we are actively hedging our clients' stock portfolios, their stocks and their mutual fund portfolios. We're hedging them. And basically what that means is if the market goes down 50%, maybe your portfolio only goes down 10.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Nobody even wants to lose 10%, but it's a whole bunch better than 50. And if our portfolios are hedged, what that means is our clients can stay fully invested. And if there's no recession, there's no big correction, they're just going to continue to make money. But if we do have a downturn, they're protected to a very large degree. So we're putting hedges on our portfolios actively.
So you're changing the distribution and putting the money in more protected areas.
Well, think of it like this. If you've got a home and you've got home insurance and you have some water damage, well, that's going to lower the value of your home, right?
Sure.
But if you have insurance and they give you a check, well, maybe there's a deductible. Maybe you lost a little bit, but it's not that big loss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same thing with a portfolio. You can kind of sort of buy insurance for your portfolio. The cost is minimal, but it protects you.
Okay, so that's what you're doing with your clients.
Yes, absolutely.
How about if someone isn't one of your clients? I mean, what do you suggest that they do, or how do they go about this?
Well, the thing we suggest they do is come in and see us.
Become one of your clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically what that allows us to do is to sit down with people and help them understand exactly how much risk they have.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can show them specifically for their portfolio how to hedge it and how to protect themselves.
You know, it is one of those things. I said we're in the longest recovery in our history, and yep. people become a little bit lackadaisical, or, you know, we talk about this a lot, where you might not even realize where your money is or where your risk level is and whether it matches your lifestyle or your life situation.
I can't tell you how many people we've sat down with and I asked them, how do you feel about risk? And they say, no, that's not us.
Right.
And I'll ask them, well, how much would you be comfortable with losing? And they look at me like a deer in the headlights. I said, we don't lose anything. And yet we do a report for them, and we find out that they could lose 40 or 50% the next big downturn. And so you're right. A lot of people don't even realize how much risk they have.
You know, and we're in that time now where the people who lost pensions or worked without benefit of a pension are coming toward retirement with their own 401k and savings.
Right.
And I just feel, I don't think certainly not the only one, but we're just not ready. You know, I think as a country, we're not ready to retire.
You know, I've been on the Noon Business Lunch Hour for 5 years. I think this is probably the first time that I've ever talked about a recession and the first time I've ever talked about hedging portfolios.
Mm-hmm.
But I look, if you're approaching retirement, you're late 50s, early 60s, and you've got enough money to retire, Steve, you've won the game. You've won the game. You don't have to keep playing the same way. If you're playing football and you're up by 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, you're not going to play the same. You're going to play a little more protectively.
That's a great way to put it, right?
Yeah. You've
got the
playing.
Lead. Keep the lead.
You can keep the lead. You can keep playing. You can still put some points on the board, but be a little bit more conservative. And Steve, with that, I haven't seen you for at least over a month.
Right.
Let's do an offer for our listeners. The first 5 callers who call in have at least $500,000 in their portfolio. We'll sit down and help them understand this inside and out. We'll do a risk test for them. We'll do a full financial plan for them on a complimentary basis and help them get ready if this comes about.
Bill Geiger, it was great to see you again.
Good to see you, sir.
Thanks, Ryan Burroughs. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, we try to spread the good news when it comes to money and real estate, things like that, tech in the world. But unfortunately, Dennis Rodkin is here today.
But unfortunately.
Who writes, so tomorrow there's a Jewish deli opening up in Uptown,
uh-huh.
And we're going to have them in tomorrow to talk about it.
Yeah.
Completely vegan.
Oh.
So I'm assuming it's like vegan brisket you can get at this Jewish deli.
And you thought of me because...
No, I'm trying to find something happy. And
something
you
happy.
Didn't bring anything in today.
Because I'm sorry that I didn't bring you any vegan food, Steve.
Okay, so...
But I brought you a lot of bad news.
Well, you know, it's always bad news when it comes to the housing here.
Unfortunately, we're on 13 years of bad news as of this month.
But some of the numbers that you brought here really explain things. Like, we are still... we still haven't recovered from our peak, right?
Our peak was 13 years ago in September, was September 2006. And that's according to the Case-Shiller Index, okay. Which, of course, indexes all the major cities as well as the nationwide figures. Their latest release was out on Tuesday, and so I used it to look at how we compare to our peak month 13 years ago.
And so not only are we not back to where we were then, we're still quite a ways from it.
We're 12% below, right. And at this time last year, we were about 14% below. So we've gained, but not enough. I mean, it's going to be a while before right. We actually get back to our old peak. And one of the things I think I'd really like to say about that is whenever I bring that up, people say, well, those peak prices in 2006, they were crazy.
Right.
We don't need to get back to those prices. But I had an economist from CoreLogic, Case-Shiller, talking to me about that in this story, and I think you saw it. Our prices at the peak, or from 2000 to the peak, had gone up about 68% in some of those super inflated cities, Las Vegas, Phoenix. prices had gone up more than twice that. They'd gone up about 120%, over 120%. The point of that is they were the frothy places. They were the places that had inflated to the point where, of course, they were going to come down.
And Phoenix is still suffering, right?
Phoenix is still suffering. Yeah, those two towns, those two cities I just named are still below, they are farther from their peak than Chicago is. So is Miami. But my point there is, yes, our prices went up a fair amount in the early 2000s, and they may have reached an unrealistic point. But the first thing to know about that is other places were really super inflated compared to us. And the other is, regardless of whether those prices were where they should have been, most other cities are now above those peaks. So regardless of what you think should be happening, other cities have gone well past their old peaks while we're still behind ours.
So we're 12% down, and nationally the number is, I think, 13% up.
Yeah.
So we're where we were in essentially 2004.
In 2004, yeah. Our home prices are about where they were in 2004.
And so why is it? Is it because we had some neighborhoods hit especially hard, or what is it? I mean, I don't want to talk about the tax base and blah, blah, blah again, but I mean,
it is all that blah, blah, blah again. Yeah. I mean, part of it is our enormously high property taxes and the fear of further, it's not really a fear because we know it's coming, further property tax increases, because if I'm planning to, if I'm looking ahead at property tax increases, I know that my cost of homeownership is going to go up just on the taxes. So what I'm willing to spend for a house is going to go down to keep that same base.
So that's keeping you from buying or keeping you from buying up?
Keeping me from buying up. We also have the highest proportion of people who are underwater on their homes in any city other than Miami.
That's a shocking story you wrote. I
was surprised
at the number. It's nearly 10% of us can't afford to sell our homes?
Can't afford to sell our homes. Either are so far underwater that we would have to bring money to the closing table, or are not underwater but have such a slim slice of home equity that we couldn't afford the move up. We couldn't afford the commissions and those sorts of things that are involved in moving to another home. So I don't put my house on the market, and that is a reduced piece of demand, or that puts a reduction on demand, so I'm not bidding prices up either.
Right.
And at the same time, we have population loss, which also reduces demand. So our prices simply are not going up.
Is there anything we can do to fix this?
We can buy multiple houses at once.
Let's get Ken Griffiths in here. No, but I mean, as far as the fix, it seems like here is government fixing its other problems. I mean, it is resolving the pension in some way, or I mean, I don't know otherwise how you turn this around.
Well, resolving the pensions without raising taxes would be great, but that's very difficult because, of course, we can't cut Change pension cut. Benefits according to the state constitution. A huge jobs program would be wonderful, something that would make Chicago a job center that people move into and don't, because then we create more demand for homes.
Well, you were writing about the cities that have done well are the cities that have become sort of tech centers.
Yeah, the Seattle's.
I thought Chicago was making great strides toward that.
We are. Relative to zero, we are. But relative to San Francisco, Seattle, Austin, we're not.
Okay. And then, so when we see these numbers, I know we're going to talk about Flossmoor after the break, but when we see these numbers, it doesn't mean that everyone is where they were at 2014.
Right.
That's the average. So
It's the gross figure for the entire region. So as I said in the story, that takes into account places like the West Loop where prices have been booming, have been rising really fast, and places like the South Cook County suburbs, where in many cases they continued to fall for several years after the period when the rest of the region was improving. It's everybody.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio. We're going to talk real estate and interesting story about Flossmoor and others. But right now, this from Bennett Wicknight.
Ooh, start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Okay. I know we've talked a lot about the pot industry this year, but it's a multi-billion dollar business that's literally waiting for a switch to be flipped, and that switch is about to get flipped. House of Representatives just passed a bill to allow legal marijuana businesses to put their money in banks. Beforehand, the federal banking system literally saw that money as drug money, despite many states deeming it legal. So many of these companies had to work with small local banks, or work straight in cash. All right, so
I've got $20,000 under my mattress, $60,000 in my closet, and $3,000 in the safe. We're doing pretty good. And Chicago State's feeling pretty good about their new MBA program in an effort to spur attendance, but more importantly, bring African Americans into corporate executive positions. The school's demographic of 3,000 students is roughly 77% African American. And of that 3,000, 70% of them are women. When you're looking at change at these higher levels, you gotta make the change at the base. This is one of those efforts that will over time make a significant impact. So way to go, Chicago State Cougars. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, we've been teasing Flossmoor, talking about going to Flossmoor. Dennis Rodkin is here, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business, and he went in search of, after spending weeks in the mire of the economic news, and some good news, and you found it in Flossmoor, Illinois.
Flossmoor is the strongest real estate market of the year in the suburbs, the strongest suburban real estate market of the year, or another way to put it is the most improved.
Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't mean, because they didn't start out great, right?
Right, exactly. Okay. So much of it is that they have improved from being in a difficult, South Cook County has been slower to recover than other parts of the region. Flossmoor, as everybody knows, is just a beautiful little spot in the garden spot in the south suburbs. And in the first 8 months of 2019 has seen the number of home sales go up, the median price of those selling go up, the time a house spends on the market go down, and the inventory of unsold homes has been burned off by more than half. All four of those positive improvements, and I didn't find that in any other suburb. The next closest is Western Springs, which didn't burn off its inventory, right, quite so much. So I put Flossmoor ahead. Flossmoor, it's a beautiful place. It's inexpensive by comparison to most other suburbs.
I've never heard it mentioned so often without being Homewood Flossmoor. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's one of the other attributes is Homewood Flossmoor High School. Homewood has also been on some of my best lists in the past. It's just not performing like Flossmoor this year. Flossmoor, again, so some of that is recovery. Some of the reason it's improving is that a lot of these places are waking up later than the Oak Parks and Evanston's the world, which were among the first suburbs to wake up because they're urban. But it's doing quite well. Big flurry of sales this year.
You know how I love the stories behind houses or towns. And so tell me about the origin of Flossmoor. I had no idea until I read your story.
That it was a golf community.
Yeah, it started in the 19th century, so 1800s.
Yeah. As a golf community. So there's this boom in golf that is what built places like Highland Park, and almost as far south, Flossmoor, many other communities, Midlothian, Wheaton developed with golf. There were three golf courses within range of the Flossmoor train station, and it has had sort of a Scottish village feel originally. That some of that is gone, but beautiful houses right by the, in the first several blocks from the train station, you feel that you're in a great little, a small town with sort of an architectural heritage, really pretty Tudors and colonials and things like that. Downtown is, you know, like a block and a half long, but adorable.
What led to the golf boom in the 20s?
Actually, so it starts with the, I don't know how much time we have.
But all the time in the world. Take 30 seconds.
A kid from Lake Forest goes to finishing school, prep school in Scotland, brings the game back, plays a game of golf on the bluffs in Lake Forest at a house that I've written about where there still is a big lawn.
Right.
And then starts a golf club out. It starts near Wheaton, and then they build a larger club in Wheaton, and Wheaton Golf, the club out there, is the first 18-hole golf course west of the Rockies.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No, not west of the Rockies. East?
I believe so, yeah.
No, we're east of the Rockies, you said.
Yep, sorry, west of the Appalachians. East. Yeah. Right. I was right, Steve. Wheaton's a lot farther west than you think.
So I had no idea of that story. So a kid from Lake Forest goes to Scotland and brings golf back to Wheaton.
Yeah.
Wow.
But brings it first to Lake Forest, and then all the then there are these beautiful houses that were built in Wheaton around Wheaton Golf. And then it's the, I don't know, it's the Pokemon of its day. It's so trendy that there are golf courses built not only outside Chicago, but outside other cities as well. At all the one of the things train companies would do is lay a track to where there are going to be these golf courses.
That's fascinating. I had no idea. See, so you did it. You came in with some good news, Dennis Rodgers.
Finally, yeah. It's from 100 years ago, but still.
Thanks for coming back. Listen, I'd like to say don't come back till you have good news, but I'd love to see you. So I will not set that as the bar.
I will spend the next couple weeks looking for something positive to say.